Welcome to the Deep Dive. Imagine for a moment you've built a thriving business, poured your heart into it, and, well, you've meticulously planned for its future.
Mm-hmm.
You have a buy-sell agreement in place, you're confident protects your legacy, ensures a fair transition for your family if anything, you know, unexpected happens.
You think you've got all the bases covered?
Exactly. Dotted every I, crossed every T. But what if a recent Supreme Court decision quietly, or maybe not so quietly, shifted the ground beneath your feet, potentially inflating your estate tax by millions without you even realizing it? That's a surprise nobody wants.
It truly is. And what's fascinating here is how just one ruling, Connolly v. United States, has, well, profoundly reshaped a critical aspect of estate planning, specifically for closely held businesses.
Okay.
So our deep dive today is really all about understanding the nuances of this case, why it's such a game changer, and, you know, most importantly, the concrete steps you as a business owner need to think about right now.
Right, to protect your business, protect your family from these unexpected tax burdens.
Precisely.
And to help us navigate these waters, we'll be pulling insights from a crucial source, revisiting Connolly v. United States. Think of this deep dive as maybe your essential shortcut.
Yeah, a shortcut to being well-informed on a legal development that could really directly impact your financial future.
Okay, so to truly grasp the implications, we need to zero in on the specifics of Connolly v. United States.
Let's do it.
At its heart, this case centered on a very specific yet incredibly common question. Do life insurance proceeds held by a corporation to buy back a deceased shareholder's stock, do they increase the value of that shareholder's estate for federal estate tax purposes?
It sounds so technical, right?
It does. But the answer, well, it reshaped estate planning for countless family businesses.
Absolutely.
The actual situation involved two brothers, Michael and Thomas Connolly. They were the sole shareholders of Crown Sea Supply, Inc.
Okay.
Michael held about 77% of the shares. Thomas owned the rest, about 23%.
Yeah.
They had a pretty standard buy-sell agreement, you know, the kind common in closely held businesses. It stipulated that if one brother died, the surviving brother had the option to buy the deceased's shares.
An option, okay.
But if the survivor declined, then the corporation itself was obligated to redeem those shares.
Ah, the corporation had to step in.
Exactly. And, crucial to this case, Crown Sea Supply had life insurance policies on each brother specifically to fund this obligation.
Seems like a solid plan, right?
It really does. On the surface, it's exactly what advisors often recommend. So what happened?
Well, when Michael passed away, Thomas chose not to personally buy his shares.
Okay, so that triggered the corporate redemption.
Right, meaning Crown Sea Supply was now required to purchase Michael's shares from his estate.
Mm-hmm.
And the company used $3 million of the life insurance proceeds it held specifically for this purpose. Consequently, Michael's estate reported his shares as being worth that same $3 million for estate tax. Now, from a business owner's perspective, that makes perfect sense. Insurance pays $3 million, shares are bought for $3 million, value reported is $3 million. Seems logical.
Totally logical, but the IRS saw it very differently.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. They argued that because the corporation actually received $3.5 million in life insurance proceeds, not just the $3 million it used for redemption.
No, there was more.
A bit more, yeah. So they argued those entire proceeds were corporate assets and should have been included when valuing the company before the redemption happened.
Wait, so the IRS was saying the entire $3.5 million, even the extra $500,000 not used for this specific share redemption, should boost the company's value before the redemption even happened?
That's exactly their argument. It feels incredibly counterintuitive, doesn't it? For a business owner who thought they were just providing liquidity for a buyout?
Yeah, it's like being taxed on money that just, like, passed through the company's bank account for a moment.
Right. Like, it arrived at the party, danced around for a minute, and then immediately left before anyone could really, you know, benefit from it.
Right. Exactly. To put it into perspective, let's say Crown Sea Supply was valued at maybe $5 million before Michael's death and before considering the life insurance.
Okay.
The IRS's argument was that upon Michael's death, the company instantly received $3.5 million in cash from the insurance. So just for a moment, the company's value jumped to $8.5 million.
Wow.
And even though $3 million was then immediately paid out to buy Michael's shares, that initial higher valuation stuck for tax purposes. This significantly boosted the company's value and consequently the estate tax owed by Michael's estate.
That's a huge difference, a key distinction that I imagine caught many people off guard.
It absolutely did.
So what was the Supreme Court's final word on this? How did they resolve this complex scenario?
Well, the Supreme Court ultimately sided with the IRS.
They did. Wow.
Yeah. And they made two critical points that really from that moment on changed the game for many businesses with similar arrangements. First, they stated unequivocally, life insurance proceeds payable to the company are corporate assets.
No ambiguity there.
None. Hmm. And they must be included when valuing the shares of the deceased shareholder. There's just no escaping that.
Okay, point one. What was the second?
Second, they clarified that a contractual redemption obligation, even if it's for fair market value like it was here, is not a liability that offsets those proceeds for valuation purposes.
So, hold on. Even though the company had to use that money to buy the shares, like it was legally obligated,
right,
and the money immediately left the company coffers, it's still counted as an asset for valuation before that obligation was met.
That's precisely the ruling. It's a huge shift in how many business owners, and maybe even some advisors, understood these agreements.
It really is. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, Michael's estate faced significantly higher taxes, not because the insurance wasn't used to redeem shares. It absolutely was.
Mm-hmm. The mechanism worked as planned in that sense.
Right. But because the mere existence and receipt of that insurance by the corporation increased the company's value for tax purposes before the shares were redeemed. The cash was gone, but the tax burden it created, that remained.
A painful outcome.
Yeah. For countless closely held businesses, life insurance is, I mean, it's the absolute bedrock of their buy-sell agreements.
Yeah.
It's designed to provide crucial liquidity, certainty, a smooth transition.
All the right reasons.
Exactly. Ensuring the business continues, the family is fairly compensated. But after Connolly, if your corporation owns those policies, those very proceeds could inadvertently inflate your estate tax value.
Completely undermining the original goal.
Totally undermining it. You're trying to protect your family, and instead you could be creating a multi-million-dollar tax problem you never ever saw coming.
And this creates what we started calling phantom estate tax exposure.
Phantom tax. Explain that.
Well, your estate ends up owing more tax simply because the company's value was inflated on paper by the insurance proceeds it received, even though that cash immediately left the company to redeem the shares.
So the estate gets a bigger tax bill.
Right, a very real, potentially much larger tax bill.
But the cash to pay that specific extra tax isn't easily accessible within the estate itself because it was used by the corporation to buy the shares.
Precisely. It's a classic liquidity trap. The tax burden is real. The cash to meet it isn't where you need it, in the estate.
That distinction is incredibly important. So for you, the listener, the business owner, with a buy-sell agreement funded by corporate-owned life insurance, this isn't just some fascinating legal theory, right?
Not at all.
It's a direct threat to your family's financial security and the liquidity of your estate. A plan made with the best intentions could now have a very unintended and very costly consequence.
Yeah, it's a serious heads up.
Okay. Understanding the problem is crucial, obviously. But more importantly, what can business owners do about this? Let's dive into some actionable insights, because there are ways to mitigate this risk, right?
Absolutely. There are definitely strategies to consider.
So the primary, maybe the game-changing distinction highlighted by Connolly is between two key buy-sell structures. Understanding which one applies to you is like step one.
It really is fundamental.
Okay. First, you have the entity purchase, or sometimes called a redemption agreement. This is what the Connolly brothers had.
Right. The company buys back the shares.
Exactly. The corporation owns the life insurance, and it's the corporation that redeems the shares. After Connolly, those insurance proceeds, they will almost always increase the value of the company and therefore the taxable estate.
That's the key takeaway for that structure now.
Now, compare that to a cross-purchase agreement. Here, things are different. The individual shareholders own the life insurance policies on each other.
Okay. Shareholder A owns a policy on B, B owns one on A, and so on.
Precisely. When a shareholder dies, the proceeds are paid directly to the surviving shareholders, not the company.
Ah, bypasses the company entirely.
Exactly. They then use that money to buy the deceased's shares directly from their estate. And crucially, these proceeds avoid the corporate value bump because the company never owns the policy, never receives the funds.
That's a vital difference. It sidesteps the whole Connolly valuation issue at the corporate level. Can save significant tax dollars.
A huge difference.
So this naturally raises a critical question for you, the business owner listening. Who currently owns your policy? Is it the company? Is it the individual shareholders? Or maybe, perhaps, is it a trust?
Good question.
This ruling strongly encourages, really, a reevaluation of your existing structure. For example, you should be considering whether an irrevocable life insurance trust, an ILAT, or a cross-purchase structure might better align with your tax and liquidity needs now. These alternatives are specifically designed to keep those insurance proceeds out of the corporate valuation,
helping you avoid the exact pitfalls from Connolly.
Exactly. An ILAT, for instance, owns the policy completely outside of your taxable estate and outside the company. The proceeds can then be used, perhaps lent to the estate or used to buy assets from the estate, to provide liquidity for estate taxes without directly inflating the company's value in the first place.
Okay, so structure is key.
Yeah.
But it's not just about having an agreement, right? Hmm. You also need to be consistent with how you value shares within that agreement.
Absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Does your agreement specify a clear formula for valuation, maybe an appraisal process, or perhaps an agreed-upon certificate of value that's, you know, regularly updated?
And you have to stick to it.
You have to stick to it. Okay. The Connolly case showed the parties actually ignored their own valuation provisions. They just sort of agreed on a number they thought was fair.
Oh, that probably didn't help.
It weakened their position significantly in the eyes of the court.
Yeah.
So if you have a method outlined in your agreement, you absolutely need to follow your own rules religiously. Don't leave room for the IRS to argue you didn't adhere to your own plan.
Makes sense. Be consistent.
We also touched on that phantom estate tax exposure earlier, and it's so important it probably bears repeating and a closer look. You must review whether your corporate-owned policy amounts are sized correctly. Are they maybe unintentionally inflating your company's value? Are they creating a tax burden for your estate that the policy was actually meant to alleviate?
Right. The policy was supposed to solve a liquidity problem, not create a bigger tax problem.
Precisely. This is about ensuring the cash is exactly where it needs to be when the tax bill arrives, rather than paradoxically increasing the tax bill itself. It's definitely a moment for a deep breath and a careful review with your advisors.
Asking the tough questions.
Asking, is this policy truly providing the liquidity we envisioned? Or is it, you know, creating a new headache?
Okay, so we've talked entity purchase versus cross purchase, ILAITs, valuation consistency, checking policy amounts. What about other structures? Is corporate-owned insurance just bad now?
Not necessarily bad in all scenarios, no. But it does mean the structure matters much, much more than ever before. The Connolly decision really underscores the paramount importance of how things are set up.
So maybe exploring alternatives.
Yes. This is where exploring maybe hybrid arrangements, ones that combine elements of both entity and cross-purchase agreements, or even looking at things like LLC-owned insurance, might come into play.
LLC-owned insurance, how does that work?
Well, it can offer a similar separation from the operating company's valuation, much like a cross-purchase agreement. By having a separate LLC, rather than the primary operating company, own the policies.
Ah, another layer of separation.
Exactly. The insurance proceeds can potentially be kept out of the operating company's valuation calculation. The key, really, the absolute key, is to work closely with experienced legal and tax counsel.
Not a DIY project.
Definitely not. Revisit your current structure, understand the full implications of Connolly for your specific situation, and identify any unnecessary tax exposure that might be lurking there. It's all about being proactive, not reactive.
Right, getting ahead of the issue.
So to sum up, the Supreme Court in Connolly didn't outlaw redemption agreements or corporate-owned life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be clear on that. But it did make unequivocally clear that estate valuation rules, they're going to look past your intentions and focus squarely on the fair market value of all corporate assets. And that includes life insurance proceeds, if they're held by the corporation.
Intentions don't override the mechanics of valuation.
Exactly. So for you, the business owner, this really means it's time. Time to revisit your agreements with fresh eyes. Ask yourself those crucial questions. Who currently owns the insurance policies funding my buy-sell?
Number one.
How are shares valued in the agreement? And importantly, do we actually follow that method consistently?
Number two, consistency.
And critically, will there truly be enough liquidity to cover any estate tax without inadvertently creating an unexpected bigger estate tax problem because of the insurance itself?
That's the million-dollar question. Maybe literally.
It really could be.
Okay. So a properly designed buy-sell agreement, it remains one of the most powerful tools for business continuity, right? Ensuring smooth transitions, protecting your legacy.
Absolutely essential for many businesses.
But after Connolly, the choice of structure entity versus cross-purchase, maybe using trusts, It isn't just a preference anymore. It feels like it's absolutely critical for your estate tax planning and for the financial well-being of your family down the line.
It's moved from important detail to potentially critical factor.
Yeah, it's a powerful reminder, isn't it, that sometimes the seemingly small details in your legal structure, like who holds an insurance policy, can have multi-million dollar impacts. It really begs the question, doesn't it? What seemingly minor details in your business structure might be waiting to surprise you, and are you prepared to uncover them?
A crucial question indeed.